everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you along with Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing. Tom, it was nice while it lasted. Autumn seems to have, the forecast shows near record highs over the weekend.
But not the kind of record highs that we were enduring lately.
No, we're talking more like
upper 80s.
Upper 80s.
I think we can live with that.
Touching maybe 90 degrees, but it'd be warm. But no, we are still very much into autumn. In fact, today is the second day of November, 2023. It is All Souls Day, the day we remember the dearly departed, especially the recently departed, like my wife of 51 years, Anne Birch Buckmaster. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's source for trusted local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening. Not only can you listen to our program live, you can hear all of our past programs, well, pretty much 99% of them, at buckmastershow.com, our live line, if you'd like to join in the conversation. It's 790-2040, and it is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We're going to begin today with Dr. Albrecht Claussen, the renowned scholar of medieval history. Dr. Claussen is a University of Arizona Distinguished Professor of German Studies. He has published 122 scholarly books. That might have changed since the last month that we interviewed him. Those numbers keep going up. 840 articles, 2,400 book reviews, 10 volumes of poetry, 4 volumes of essays, and textbooks, including a handbook of medieval studies. Professor Claussen has won many honors, including Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions, in recognition of his outstanding service to German studies. He's the editor-in-chief of the international online journal titled Humanities. His most recent books include Wisdom from the Middle Ages and Humanities in the 21st Century. In the fall of 2022, a year ago, he spent a semester in Cairo, Egypt, and that was part of his honor as a Fulbright scholar. Professor Claussen, how are you?
Thank you very much, Bill. I always appreciate that you give a voice also to a humanities scholar. So I think since I'm a medievalist, that might be the foundation of the humanities. So I really appreciate that you allow me to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much. We do have a very good line. Normally, of course, I would like to have you in studio, but believe me, I'd rather have you on the phone rather than not at all. Let's put it that way.
Thank you.
All right. So many of these celebrations, like what I call the triad days, Halloween on the 31st of October, November 1, All Saints Day, and then today, All Souls Day, can trace back their origins to the Middle Ages and even further back, correct?
That's very true. It is a fundamental need for people somehow to engage with their deceased and their loved ones and somehow to come to terms with a very mysterious world we do not understand, whether we are in a science or not. It's simply the world of the dead, the world of spirits, of magic, witchcraft, whatever it might be. Those are all things that are certainly present. We cannot grasp them in rational terms. So people have always resorted to alternative ways, celebrating them using masks, conceiving of certain practices such as altar pieces and processions and other images. It is a fundamental need to come to terms with that dimension.
So many around the world, Dr. Claussen, are so much more attuned to living and honoring the dead. North Americans and perhaps even over in Europe, we don't like to discuss anything to do with dying. We don't like to discuss last days of hospice. We don't like to discuss funerals. We avoid the topic of death like the plague. What are some of your thoughts on this, please?
Yeah, thank you. In a way, I totally agree with you. Particularly Western culture, particularly in the United States, seems to try to sanitize everything because we live in a world of youth. Everything has to be youth, young people, beauty, and so forth, whereas we forget and ignore, maybe deliberately, the truth of our existence, which is, of course, a process. And we all know that we are growing old. After this interview, we both will be half an hour older, and that continues all the time. This is a realization that we as human beings are physical beings and hence subject to transition. And I think it's an extremely healthy approach to understand this. I like to ask my students normally here at the university, you know, they're young people having come freshly from the high schools or so, and or second, third years. And I ask them then always, what is the best time to think about death? So then there's always a big pause of silence when I then say, now. Always now. Because we both have discussed that already before. When you ask yourself about the meaning of death, which is a very esoteric, very philosophical and theological question, then I have a very simple, very pragmatic answer. Why is there death? And death really has always been recognized as a catalyst for us living to lead a better life, to appreciate what we have, to be grateful, and to live a life of humility and humbleness. So all these celebrations of death and the mask and the calaveras and so forth, of course, it's very playful today, and it appears very much to our sense of horror, but in reality, and it really goes back, as you mentioned at the beginning, to very old ancient cultures, celebration of the dead as part of the living, and we all should understand that we are part of the same large community, living and the dead.
Well, when you think about your area of expertise, the medieval world, talk a little bit about how death was viewed. And certainly there was no shortage of death with, of course, the Black Plague and so many other diseases, the life expectancy. I don't know what it was in the Middle Ages, but it was probably not very long. Talk a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, okay. So we have done a lot of research. I myself have published a book on old age and also a book on death and dying in the Middle Ages. One really fascinating phenomenon is the transi. The transi, T-R-A-N-S-I, is a sculpture very typical of English culture, late Middle Ages and early modern times. The transi is a sculpture normally showing a noble person still living, but the transi, the sculpture, shows that person already dead and in a stage of decay. So we have about 25 to 30 of those all over England, not really in other parts of Europe, and the noble donors of those, or those who commissioned the sculptures to be done in their likeness, wanted to demonstrate in public. They were displayed in churches, so really in full view of everyone, that they were aware of their transcendence, their transitoriness, their evanescence, so the certain sense of humility. And why? Because the most important lesson we can get from that time age is to live. It means really you should try to prepare yourself for a good death. So the most privileged people in the pre-modern world were monks and nuns, because they were able to live within a community, and that community was going to take care of them, particularly at the very last stages of their lives. You know, everything we ignore today, we push the ailing and dying people away to some kind of nursing home so that we don't have to witness those. Whereas in reality, the gruesome nature of death is, of course, always present with us.
Now, I want to go back to these statues. I've never heard of this before.
Yeah.
Okay, were these like noblemen, and these were these were commissioned statues. So the face had not, I assume, was still recognizable and had not deteriorated, but parts of the body had. Is that what we're talking about?
So you see the skeleton, you see the veins, you see the worms, snakes going through your rib cage, things like that. So a normal state of dissolution of the body. The artists, we know, went to the cemeteries and they studied closely corpses. So what they then did was to recreate those corpses, but then they applied maybe names or crowns so that the transy was still recognizable. And that's stereotypical of England, but you have countless numbers of similar things on the continent, but then also it spilled over to the New World, South and Central America, and it spilled over to our own world, the celebration of the dead, which should not be feared, but rather celebrated. We should remember. So the whole purpose is really, on the one hand, memory, remembrance, and on the other hand, your own preparation for the afterlife. There's nothing better for you to get away of or get rid of the fear of the afterlife, because that is just a transition into another dimension.
All right, let's pause right here. We'll have more with Dr. Albrecht Clausen of the University of Arizona. First, I want to talk about let's talk about comfort food after the picturing that boy. That's why I do this show. I learn something every day. I had no idea that there were these kind of half-dead statues over in England. We're talking now, though, about Mona's Danish Bakery, where you can get a great Danish kringle and you can get wonderful European-style pastries. Their website is monasdanishbakeryright.com, and they're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They are now taking orders for the Thanksgiving dinner. Dr. Professor, what is your choice when it comes to Thanksgiving? Do you have a particular dessert that you are particularly fond of?
Well, I have to say, since I am of a German extraction, I would prefer the German Stollen, for example. But since you mentioned the Kringle, that is another wonderful European pastry. But I like to say, whatever I eat, I want to be with my family, with those that I love. And so it doesn't really matter what I eat, as long as I'm in a good company amongst those whom I love and who love me back.
Wow, very good. Very good testimonial about also Mona's Danish Bakery and the Danish Kringle. We'll be back with Dr. Clausen after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with a Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview. Tom Horn is joining us, the controversial Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction. Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star will be my guest media anchor person with me as we talk with Superintendent Horn. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We love Green Things, the place to go for all of your gardening needs, 3384 East River Road. The 13-acre site is just chock full of everything you need for the garden. Also, they grow thousands of poinsettias, and they are now just about ready for the holidays. So that's something to keep in mind. That always makes kind of a holiday feel for your Thanksgiving table. So check it out, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They're open daily. They're in their 53rd year of business. We continue now on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, with our good friend Dr. Albrecht Clausen, University of Arizona Distinguished Professor and a Fulbright, newly minted within the last year, Fulbright Scholar. Scholar of medieval history. So, Professor, it's counterintuitive to me. So here we are in a culture where people really don't want to talk about death. Yet, when you look at Halloween, this news came out just this week. It has become the fastest growing holiday in the United States. It's beginning to rival the amount of money that is spent in this country on Christmas. So it's counterintuitive. So what is it all about demons and monsters? How are these people who reject in everyday life talking about death want to dress up like a monster or a skeleton?
Yeah, thank you. That's a really good question. And let's talk very briefly about the other holiday the Christians celebrate, Christmas. Only in the United States do we celebrate Christmas in a completely wrong way. We always have St. Nicholas, who is somehow associated with Christmas, which is utterly wrong because historically this was a bishop who arrives on December 6th and prepares everyone for the actual Christmas. So what I'm talking about is a complete capitalization on a Christian holiday or any other holiday. So what is happening here is with the same thing with Halloween, which is now actually spreading to many other cultures across the world, whether in Japan or Germany, that the industry has taken over and uses people's delight in playing, in putting on costumes, and sort of playing out their fantasies. This is a completely commercialized form of dealing with very traditional ancient cultures. I do not condemn it. It's fun. It's good for kids. It's also good for adults. all that is fun because it's a game. Fine, let people do that. But in cultural terms, it is really wrong in every respect, because Halloween or other holidays, All Saints and so forth, they really go back to, as you emphasized at the beginning, to a culture that tried to pay its dues to the dead, to those that passed away, to bring them back into this life and to celebrate their memory. Now, why there are witches or monsters or something like that, I think that has a lot to do with archetypal human need to understand something in the other world. I would also like to point out that we are sort of victims of a wrong sociological interpretation. The famous founder of sociology, Max Weber, had argued at the end of the 19th century that we live now in the world of disenchantment because of technology and machines, computers, and so forth. Where that is certainly true, we live a very rational life, but this doesn't mean at all that people's needs for fantasy, for alternative forms of existence would have disappeared. Throughout all ages and cultures, you have the notion of witchcraft, of the devil, you know, necromancy, and so forth. That is just human need. And I have to add one more time, and that's exactly what the industry has taken on and is abusing big time, because there's enormous amount of money spent on candy, which, yes. You know.
You know, monsters are always associated with kind of the unknown world. I have studied old maps, and you will see in the old maps where there are areas that are unknown land, and this can be also areas of the Atlantic Ocean. There will be like a monster. This is a way. Is this a way for us to kind of explain, Professor, the unknown world?
That's a very good point. There's always the realization that we live in our world and that there are other worlds. Science cannot explain this well. So while in the Middle Ages and early modern age, there was a firm belief in the monsters, but these monsters were always at the edge, the outer edge of the world. So let's say once America had been discovered, the monsters were suddenly pushed very far north, maybe to the Arctic Circle or Far East Asia or somewhere. And then in our own day and age, of course, we have science fiction, which is exactly the same thing, working with monsters or other creatures, but now in outer space. It always has to be far away so that you cannot verify anything. It is a play on fantasy.
What are some of your final thoughts? We've only got about 3 minutes. As we look at what should we keep in mind this time of year, and going back to what you said about Saint Nicholas, as I recall, didn't all of that start over in the Netherlands and Holland?
Yes, that, and then of course Walt Disney picked that up and transformed that playfulness into a very almost heretical, blasphemic, blasphemous notion about what Christmas is all about. You know, all these celebrations, whether it's Halloween or Christmas for the Christians, but the same way by for the Muslims or Jews who celebrate similar events, it is really serving to remind us of our humble origin, of our dependency on other forces, whether you call it God or Allah or whatever it might be, but rather the understanding that we are just temporal beings and should submit under the, or at least acknowledge the other forces that are there. So humbleness, gratitude, love, memory, those should be the key factors in all those celebrations, whether you're Christian, Jew, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, whatever it might be.
And you've also talked in the past about misfortune, and out of misfortune can come good fortune. A few final thoughts on that, please.
Yeah, so humbleness simply means that you know that your life is temporary and it is contingent. That means death can come any time. And the more you acknowledge your own contingency, namely your temporality, the more you will enjoy your life and you will also understand better the importance of love. I mean, after all, I dare say your dear Anne passed away, but I think right now you remember much more intensively than maybe ever before how much you truly loved her. And that is a triumph that you can achieve overcoming death, because love survives death. That is the ultimate triumph. And I think we all can learn from that, whatever religion or non-religion we follow. That is the ultimate goal of our existence. So the purpose of our existence, I would dare say, is to find love and to give love. Past death, before death, throughout times, across generations, always the same goal. And it's so easy to achieve because we all know that we can easily fall in love and then give love.
Very good.
In the face of death, that is the most important message.
Very good. Wonderful message, Dr. Albrecht Clausen. Always a pleasure to have you with us, and we'll get you on back in studio before the end of the year, I hope. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for allowing me as a humanist scholar to address this topic. So important. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to have the professor. It's always a pleasure, too, to talk to Dr. David Levy, and I think he will be up next on our live line right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zilkalo Village Studio. Nice day over in Silver City. My goodness, we're going to be up to almost 90 degrees, 88 in our forecast, and it's always cooler. You know, we've been saying that for a long time. 67, perfect in Silver City, about a three-hour drive. No problem. So if you're looking for a weekend getaway and saying, you know, let's get out of town, let's go do something, head over to Southwest New Mexico, their website, southwestnewmexico.org, and lots to do, a lot of outdoor activities, hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, on it goes. Great place to kind of kick back, get away. All right, we continue on this All Souls Day with our friend Dr. David Levy, the Buckmaster contributor on science, former science editor of Parade magazine, one of the most successful comet discoverers in history. 23 comets, including his co-discovery of the very famous 1994 Shoemaker-Levy 9 that, wow, the explosion on Jupiter. What a spectacular. Doubt if we'll ever see anything like that again. Dr. David Levy, how are you, sir?
Hello, sir. Hello, Bill. It's good to hear your voice today.
Always good to hear you.
It really is especially good. I imagine that you're like me, that you made in your life two good decisions.
Yep.
One was that you married Ann.
Yes.
And the other one is that you became a broadcaster. And that we've known each other now for many years.
Many years. You really nailed that one, David. Those were those are the two best decisions in my life. You got it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And so did I. I mean, I married Wendy.
Yep.
And I made a decision when I was in high school to begin a search for comets. And this second best decision is what's carrying me through right now, and it's really so good to speak with you.
The comets are coming, aren't they, David?
Yeah, they're coming. I think we have a few, though I don't think there are any bright ones in the sky right now that can easily be seen with a telescope, but there'll be a few on their way in the next few months, I believe.
How are the torrids as meteor showers go?
The torrids are one of the weaker showers. However, they brought the brightest meteor I've ever seen. On November, I think it was November the 3rd, back in the 80s sometime, I was out taking a walk, and there was a meteor that was so bright that all the neighborhood dogs started to bark. And that was really something. I'll never forget that.
Well, and it was part of the torrids.
That was one of the torrids, and I'll be observing the torrids this weekend.
All right, David. You talked about, you know, your early search for comets, but just being out under the stars is your happy place. It's your peaceful place, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's like taking an enormous, just like the show that you continue to do.
Yes.
It's like we're both taking an enormous tranquilizer that's about 3 yards wide, and it has no side effects whatsoever. And it brings you peace, and it brings, for me, being under the stars is just a wonderful experience, and it's even more so now that I really need it.
Yeah, and I was thinking, you know, your beloved Wendy, her death preceded Anne by about a year, and doing this show, has helped me in my grief journey, and I think you under the stars have helped you, correct?
Yes, it has. It has. And the friends that I've made, not just the stars, but the people that I've made, has really helped carry me through this period.
It's time for the David Levy quote of the month. What is your quotation for our listeners this month, David?
Okay, this afternoon, the quote is from Shakespeare. And I believe I've told your listeners before that my dad threatened to disown me when I was younger if I did not inherit his love of Shakespeare. And I sure did, and I really think he would be very proud to know that not only did I inherit it, but I also took it to a different level and did, got a doctorate based on the night sky in the time of William Shakespeare. And my quotation today will be from Richard II, Act 2, Scene 4. We all know that Shakespeare did not follow astrology. He said that in Sonnet 14. He actually said that he didn't. But he knew that his audience did, and that whenever he can, he would throw an astronomical reference in. And here's one of them. The captain says, "'Tis thought the king is dead, we will not stay. The bay trees in our country are all withered, and meteors fright the fixed stars of heaven. The pale-faced moon looks bloody on the earth, and lean-looked prophets whisper fearful change."
Shakespeare knew his audience, didn't he?
He knew his audience, and he knew his sky. And I just love finding these quotes. Wendy asked me, she assigned me while I was doing my doctoral work to read all of Shakespeare's plays, every one of them, and pick out the astronomical references. And, Bill, I found over 200 of them.
Wow.
So the fellow was very interested in the night sky and loved it.
David Levy, thank you. Always a pleasure. Appreciate your friendship. As you say, going back many years, I'm venturing to say we have known each other probably, I've been in town about 35 years, so we've known each other a long time.
A very long time, and we'll continue this next month, Bill.
Thank you very much. Dr. David Levy with us on the Buckmaster Show, waiting in the wings. The counselor is here, Don Luce. We've got some really interesting items to talk with Don about next on the Buckmaster Show.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Attorney Don Luce with us in studio of the Luce Law Group with offices here in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce, the Buckmaster legal contributor. He's the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books are in their second printing. Hey, Don, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. Thank you.
A couple of very interesting items to discuss today. This compelling this issue around compelling the clergy to report crimes. This, I've always believed, and I think most people do, that what is said in the confessional is to stay in the confession booth.
Well, pretty much that's the law right now. But as you know, the law changes. It changes through court decisions. It changes through legislative action. And this privilege between a clergy person and his or her, religious follower is sacrosanct right now.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a case that's challenging that privilege insofar as it relates to confessions of sexual abuse. And it arises from a case that had just horrendous facts. A father abused his children. He confessed the crime to his bishop. Reportedly, the bishop urged him to turn himself in, to report it.
Mm-hmm.
Which he did not do, and apparently the abuse continued. The bishop felt that because a privilege attached to that discussion, that he wasn't permitted to disclose it, to disclose those facts to law enforcement, and he didn't. Unfortunately, the individual continued the abuse of his children until he was finally, years later, arrested. Apparently, he had posted something on social media, which led to his arrest. He pled guilty to something like 26 felony counts of sexual abuse, and then he hung himself in prison. Out of those facts, and it's always the difficult facts that lead to these types of efforts for change, right?
Mm-hmm.
Out of these facts, we have this lawsuit by the children who are asking the court to allow them information, and this is strange, albeit, information about what their father said to the church, because they are seeking to have the church pay damages to them for the crimes that their father committed, about which they claim the church knew.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, on the one hand, a privilege that attaches to the communications between a clergyman and the parishioner, or the penitent, as the court says.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, victims who arguably were severely injured because no reporting was made of the fact that these crimes were being committed and about which apparently the clergy knew. So the court is faced with a very, very difficult task, in my mind, of weighing the rights of the victims in this particular case against the long-standing and absolute privilege that has existed with regard to confessions.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the arguments? Well, the claimants are saying, look, you can't not report something as egregious as this. Sexual abuse of children, the claimants are saying, absolutely has to be reported, that the privilege should not apply to these types of crimes, right? And They also note that not every religion observes the practice of confession, right? Some religions do and some religions don't. Mm-hmm. And so what the claimants are saying is it would be discriminatory to say the privilege attaches to communications in this particular religion, in this particular setting, but not to communications in another religion under a different setting. So they're saying because of the application, the differences in application, the law itself is unconstitutional. I don't know how the case will ultimately be decided, but it's being argued and considered at the Arizona Supreme Court. I would also note that there are other privileges that exist, right? So everyone, I think, understands, you know, from watching Law and Order, mm-hmm. if nothing else, that there's an attorney-client privilege.
Yeah.
So information that is provided to an attorney mm-hmm. is privileged. Mm-hmm. There is also, to a great extent, a doctor-patient privilege, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. The information you give to your physician mm-hmm. is privileged. Mm-hmm. And there are privileges in other contexts. But there are also mandatory reporters of sexual abuse. Okay, so mm-hmm. who are some of the mandatory reporters? Medical professionals. Uh-huh. So even though there's a doctor-patient privilege, medical professionals and behavioral health professionals have an obligation to report sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. Likewise, in the school setting, teachers and school personnel, parents who are aware, have a mandatory reporting obligation. And interestingly, clergy who actually witness the crime mm-hmm. have an obligation, but not within the confessional setting. So there are lots of privileges, different in the sense that it depends on who the parties are to the communication, and different reporting requirements depending on the nature of the conduct being reported.
Is there something written in law that says anything about this, the clergy, that this is privileged information?
Well, that's an interesting point. The Arizona Constitution guarantees the liberty of conscience, okay? And so the proponents of the privilege are saying that it's a constitutionally protected right, that mm-hmm. the privilege exists as a result of the Arizona Constitution. Mm-hmm. The opponents of the privilege are saying, no, that particular guarantee is not as broad as the proponents are claiming, and it doesn't protect things that go to the peace and safety of the state, like sexual abuse, of course. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's a balancing act. And how the court will eventually rule on this, we don't know yet.
You would think this could go to the U.S. Supreme Court. No?
Now, it's brought under the Arizona State. The Arizona State Constitution is at the heart of it, so I don't think so.
All right. I want to quickly move to the doctors now. This ruling, doctors can challenge Arizona's genetic abnormalities abortion law. What's that all about, Don Luce?
All right. There is a case pending in federal court here in Arizona that is challenging the constitutionality of a 2021 statute that provides doctors are prohibited from performing abortions based solely upon fetal abnormalities. Okay. The history of this statute is a bit interesting because in 2021, Roe versus Wade was still the law of the land. Mm-hmm. That's the historic Supreme Court decision mm-hmm. that was recently overturned in Dobbs. Mm-hmm. But at the time that the 2021 statute was enacted by the Arizona legislature and then signed into law by the Arizona governor, Roe versus Wade was still the law. It applied to every single state because it was a federal Supreme Court decision. And so the U.S. District Court in Arizona initially blocked enforcement of the 2021 statute. When Roe versus Wade was overturned and returned the issue, essentially the issue of abortion, to the states, for the states to determine what their laws were going to be. The same judge overturned his earlier blocking order and allowed the statute to go into effect. So now the proponents or plaintiffs in this lawsuit, which is currently pending, are challenging the constitutionality of the 2021 statute, saying that it's unconstitutionally vague. It's unclear. The doctors are saying, we don't know what's prohibited and what's permissible. And because of that uncertainty, the law is constitutionally infirm and cannot be enforced. The court hasn't ruled on this yet, but what the Ninth Circuit has decided just recently is that the doctors have standing to challenge the law. And the doctor's standing relates to the fact that, number one, they're confronted with potential criminal penalties, and they're confronted with potential loss of licensure if they violate a law that they contend they don't fully understand, mm-hmm. that it's not clear. Mm-hmm. What would constitute a decision based upon fetal abnormalities as opposed to other factors? I think that's basically their argument. So if you're discussing this with your patient and your patient is deciding to abort the fetus,
right,
and the fetus does have some abnormalities, does that in and of itself violate this statute?
That's really the question. They want clarity and they want protection, is what this is about, right?
Absolutely. And they contend that the law, as it's written and as it may potentially be enforced, doesn't provide them with that. Now, interestingly, the governor has already essentially taken a position on this. The attorney general has said, essentially, that she's not going to prosecute any abortion offense or violation, and she's advised, I think, not ordered, but advised the various county attorneys throughout the state of Arizona to not prosecute these types of matters, right? So on the one hand, you have a group saying, look, this is purely academic. Nobody's going to be prosecuted for this. But on the other hand, you have the doctors who are saying, well, that's under the current administration.
Exactly. What happens when there's a political change?
Exactly.
So the doctors are left holding, you know, whatever.
And also, there is one county attorney in Yavapai County who has essentially come out and said, I'm not going to abide the suggestion of the attorney general. I'm going to make my own determinations as to which laws I enforce and which laws I choose not to enforce. So you have all of that going on. And then at the same time, you have a case currently before the Arizona Supreme Court that's set to be heard in December that challenges the statute, making abortions after 15 weeks illegal in Arizona. So you have a group saying that that statute is unconstitutional. And then you have a group saying, well, under the Dobbs decision, which returned those types of matters to the state, 15 weeks is not unreasonable, and therefore the law should be enforced as written.
Boy, there's got to be some clarity sooner or later on this, not only in Arizona, but the whole country.
Think about how contentious the issue is.
Yep. All right, Don Luce, always a pleasure. The Luce Law Group, offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Don, always a pleasure. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, that'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of attorney Don Luce and Tom, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster wishing everyone well. Have a great day.